Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
Hey, everybody, welcome to HR Latte. This is Rayanne Thorne, your host. I am actually coming to you live from Omaha, Nebraska, where I will be presenting and attending at the Social HR Conference brought on or put on by Jeff Waldman and hosted this time by Red Branch Media. So I'm excited to visit Merit Hogan and her team in Omaha. Very excited to continue my series on HR Latte about diversity in the workplace. We spoke about ageism last week and about racial bias. Today we're going to tackle an interesting bias that, surprisingly to me, continues today, LGBT bias. And we're going to talk about a couple of the acronyms that have been, or initials that have been added to that acronym. I'd like to welcome my guest, Master Burnett, who is the Director of Strategy at Brave New Talent. Master, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Ryan, for inviting me to join you.
I'd like to give you a moment, if you could, to introduce yourself and tell us about the work you are doing at Brave New Talent.
Thank you. Now, so I am I'm a longtime member of the HR profession. I think next year we'll celebrate my 20-year anniversary of being in this profession. fell into it like most people. Moved to the San Francisco Bay Area to go to school, and was the start of the tech boom in the mid-90s, and I'm like, what could I be doing? And found myself in technical recruiting, like many other people, and spent 7 years in that space before I partnered up with Dr. John Sullivan and started an advisory service firm that helped organizations focus on next and best practices related to integrated talent management, and spent 13 years doing that type of work, predominantly with global 400 organizations. And then just about 3 years ago, thought I would throw my hat into the technology arena and joined a company that was doing a social recruiting technology, and they have since pivoted into knowledge sharing for multi-stakeholder environments. We power large innovation and knowledge sharing communities for organizations predominantly focused on healthcare innovation today.
I love what you guys are doing over at Brave New Talent. We need to have you back just to talk about that and the shift in online education and the impact that it is having on our community, the HR recruiting industry. And so maybe we can schedule that for sometime soon. I'm going to be hitting the topics of HR and recruiting technology over the summer. So I'd love to talk to you more about that. But today, I want to focus on continuing this conversation about diversity in the workplace. So when we hear LGBT, that actually is not, according to the community, not a fully inclusive acronym. I think it's the easier one to say, but they've recently added, not so recently, but over the last couple of years, have added Q, which stands for queer, and I for intersexual, and then A for asexual. So let's talk about this bias and what the difference is between queer, because somebody who's straight like myself, to think about queer, how is that any different than lesbian or gay? If you could answer that for me, that would be great. And this is what this series is about, is just asking the bold questions that a lot of people think about but nobody's willing to ask.
So this is a fascinating conversation and a little bit of a rabbit hole.
I know.
In that I am a member of the LGBT community, and that I am gay. And as a member of the community, and somebody who actively participates in training on raising LGBT youth, I am a foster parent in California, and California is one of those states that does require foster parents to be trained on supporting LGBT youth in care. So as in participating in those events, I'll tell you, you won't even find someone from this community that agrees on the definition. There is still widespread opinionated views on the definition of the community and what is and is not. And I think this is getting to a broader societal point.
Right.
Trying to attach a label to someone indicates they're different. But this population, when you start to get to its fully inclusive definition, is a large segment of society. It's not the 2% of the population. It's not the 5% of the population. So when it becomes a large enough segment of society, is it truly a difference that's worth labeling? And that's where you get into a lot of debate. Why does my race matter?
Right.
If a particular race is 35-45% of the local population, is the conversation of race-related issues still the predominant conversation? And the truth is, it often disappears. If you live in a heavily populated Asian community, the news will not say, and in the Asian population, it is news.
Right.
Yet, when it comes to LGBT issues, there is still a strong desire to attach a label to it and to say, you're not mainstream. You're on the margins, and therefore, in reference to my relationship to you, I need to put a label on my relationship with you. So what we could add to this string of acronyms, a lot of people don't understand gender identity.
That's right.
Which is also different. So when we talk about queer, it's a moniker that is often taken by a subset of the LGBT community that expresses a lifestyle. Whereas LGBT, specifically lesbian, means that I am in a same-sex relationship. I'm a woman and I'm in a same-sex relationship with a woman. Bring a gender identity to that, and you could be a woman in a relationship with a man who expresses themselves as a female. Still a lesbian relationship, because the identity of the other partner, even though he may be a man genetically, from a gender perspective, expresses themselves as a female. So you are in a same-sex relationship. So you can see how this string of definitions can get incredibly confusing very, very fast.
Well, that brief definition really helps, though, for anybody who's outside this community to gain a greater understanding of what's going on within and why there is some confusion, even within the community, and how we can continue to, and I hate to use the word tolerance, I really do, because it's just being a human being, right? A person that admires and looks up to other people that are surrounding them, whether they work with them, whether they live close by them, whether they do business with them as far as walking into their store or participating in any type of activity that includes interaction between human beings. We don't know what goes on behind or with that person in the background, whether they identify as straight or whether they identify as queer or gay or any other type of identification. You know, it'd be nice if we could get to a place where we say, hey, that guy in the red shirt, do you know him? Instead of, hey, that guy down the street who's a different race than me or than I, the guy down the street that's a different gender identity than I, how do you have any ideas or advice, Master? You're so eloquent when you speak, and I love that you are willing to come on HR Latte and talk about this. And frankly, I love talking about it because it opens minds, it opens doors. Do you have any advice that you can give to anybody that might be outside of the community or somebody who struggles with this? You know, they're in order for us to really understand and accept what tolerance means, it needs to be a two-way street. I mean, if somebody
sure.
who is religious, right? And wants people to accept that what they think is important as far as worship in their life or having some type of religious or spiritual side to them, they need to offer that same kind of outward tolerance that they expect somebody to feel for them. And it oftentimes the whole love one another that many religions tout is not there when it comes to somebody who is different than them.
So I would
go ahead.
This is a fascinating set because I too I have my biases.
Sure.
You know, I grew up in a conservative, small California farming town, which is very heavily leaning to the right politically. And I moved to San Francisco in the 90s, not quite the Harvey Milk days, but shortly thereafter. And I saw a flamboyance that personally I didn't find attractive at all. So when we talk about queer, which is that I'm a self-affirmed gay, I'm proud, I'm going to show everyone I'm gay, and there's a visual expression of being queer, I still to this day don't find that flamboyance attractive. And so I have my own biases. I think what really helped me understand the personal impact of expressing those biases didn't come from my relationships with other adult members of the LGBT community, but rather children. You know, by the time you're an adult, you've got life experiences, you've got reasoning skills, you're well established, and you can determine many, many things for yourself. And so to attach a bias to an adult who chooses to express themselves visually with some degree of flamboyance, that's a personal choice they've made. They've got the reasoning skills. They understand that. A child doesn't have those worldly experiences. They're expressing their true identity without the influence of societal pressure. So when a child who is 6 or 7 is telling you that they feel like they should have been born a girl, and you can see the pain in their eyes, they're doing that without any political motivation. That is their true self. So when you start to see a child talk about their feelings and their issues around being LGBTQIA, it's really hard to attach a bias to that child. It's not a learned behavior by that point. It is truly their self-identity. And I'm just one of those people who can't express hate towards a child. Ever, for any reason.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness.
So,
I feel the same way.
Yeah. So I think that really did help me understand. And you know, years ago, I would have talked incredibly negatively about somebody who is expressively flamboyant.
Right.
I don't have those same biases today. I still don't find it attractive. But I now understand that flamboyance is that person's identity. It's what makes them confident. It's what helps them cope with the challenges they face day to day with who they are. And so while it's not my personal style, I'm accepting of it as their style.
That's so important to remember, right? That's just really, really valuable phrase, right? Or words right there that you shared with us. You are an adoptive parent as well. So when you consider your own child and moving forward with your son in your family, I always want to ask just blunt straightforward, but how will you raise him so that he has less bias than you perhaps had or I had when we were children? Are there things that you're doing now?
Fascinating subject. Fascinating subject. So, as a parent, and as a somebody who's very interested in philosophy, I believe discrimination is a learned behavior, and that we can acknowledge differences between people, but attaching a negative connotation to someone being different is a purely a learned behavior. My children are incredibly lucky in that they will grow up in a community where same-sex parents are not uncommon. So when my son walks out the front door of our home, our neighbor across the street is a same-sex family. Five doors down the street is another same-sex family. When he goes to school, and this is California. We don't refer to mother and father in school anymore. We refer to parents. So when my son talks about his parents, he talks about his daddy and his papa. He will grow up in an environment in which that's not an uncommon behavior. I have another former foster son who does not live with us at this time, who is in a much, much more conservative environment. And he is now 14 years old, and we visit him on a regular basis. And in school, he does occasionally face harassment because he's quite open about the fact that he has two former foster parents, whom he still calls Daddy and Papa, that he sees on a regular basis and that he cares for. And to him, the fact that we are a same-sex couple is not a foreign concept. It's not a derogatorily perceived issue. And he jokes about the ignorance of others who think it is an issue. Because he's experienced it. So, right. You know, if you go online and you look at YouTube, there are a ton of children who have delivered incredibly eloquent speeches life growing up in a same-sex household. And, I see that with our former foster children. My children don't care that they have a daddy and a papa. And they'll ask about their mother, because obviously you can't exist in this world without having a mother.
That's right. That's part of it.
And so they'll ask about their mother, but the fact that they're not living with a mother and a father is not an issue.
Well, I appreciate what you do for children. I've had you on another show that I did called Fresh Start, where we talked about the trials of adoption into a gay household and or same-sex couple, and how difficult that can be on you when all you really want to do is just share life and love with a child who needs it, right? And I think it's so important to remember that truly love has no labels. I don't know if you've seen the ad campaign for an organization called Love Has No Labels, but they've done a brilliant job with helping to diminish thoughts of bias by doing this video campaign of the large, let's say an X-ray machine. I think it's really a video, though, of people just their skeletons and loving each other and doing it in front of a big open square where people see these two skeletons loving each other, and they come out from behind the screen, and either it's a woman and a woman, or, you know, two different racial representations of an older person and a younger person. If anybody hasn't seen that, please just go look up Love Has No Labels. It's beautiful. Let's shift gears just a bit, Master. Oh, go ahead. Do you have something to add?
I was going to say I have seen that it is a striking commercial and social experiment.
About inclusion, about diversity, about maybe letting go of some of the feelings, thoughts, or biases that you have personally by thinking about and really looking at, you know, we all bleed the same way. We all have the same bone structure. We're all human beings. I mean, to really look past what the labels are that the world has created, that society has created, and just see that each of us has a heart that we need to take care of. We need to take care of every heart that's out there. When you consider the HR profession, right, and you spend a great deal of time, as you stated in the beginning of this conversation, 20 years in the HR profession, either working in technology or as an HR professional yourself, or sharing information out there. What do you believe is the most important thing an HR professional can remember when faced with a bias issue, when a bias issue comes across their desk, or they feel or receive claims of harassment from an employee or witness it? What is the best thing that can be done to solve maybe some of these issues that are out there, or maybe even prevent it? Is it ad campaigns like this Love Has No Labels, or how can we really, I mean, do you see an answer?
Yeah, I think that's, so I think the first thing that any HR professional has to realize is that fact and perception may be entirely different. And so from an employee relations perspective, you know, an employee relations case is all about documenting the facts. It's all about legal defensibility. It's not about returning to productivity and returning to an established norm, which is unfortunate. The fact is there may not have been any actual bias, but there is perceived bias. And to someone who perceives bias, the bias is the truth.
Perception is reality. Yep, exactly.
Perception is reality to the perceiver. And that's what should drive the interaction with those individuals. It's not about telling you, no, you're wrong, we've investigated the case and there are no facts that support bias. It's about acknowledging that from a perception basis, this person says something happened. And it's about finding a way to restore some norm or some equilibrium with that individual. And oftentimes that is not, you know, a case. And in many cases when someone argues this, they're not seeking any form of structural outcome. They're seeking a personal outcome from other parties that were involved. And I would love to say that ad campaigns can immediately turn around a situation. But I've been in HR long enough to know that for some people, their beliefs are deeply held and strongly ingrained.
Right.
I have customers who are building communities that express bias that I don't personally agree with. But I still am in a position where I need to support that customer to the fullest extent
of my
capability.
Well, it goes back to that question about tolerance, right? I mean,
absolutely.
It's a two-way street.
In the workplace, I think what's important for people to realize is that the perception of bias or the perception of harassment interferes with everyone's ability to be successful. And to bring the conversation back to that and to drive some awareness and acknowledgement of, hey, whether or not you intended to harass this other individual, there is a perception of harassment. And as long as this perception persists, neither one of you are going to be able to be entirely successful. Can we figure out, one, did you attempt to harass them? And if so, that's something you deal with. If a person admits,
right,
yes, I openly harassed an individual, great, you can deal with that. But if that was not the intention of that person, then it's a misperception issue. It's a matter of adjusting those perceptions. And as somebody who has spent a lot of time in employee relations as an advisor, I can tell you a lot of the cases are truly perception issues.
It's really interesting because the conversation that I had last week with Torrin Ellis regarding racial bias is saying a lot of the same things, right? It's about sensitivity. It's about awareness. It's about really understanding, as you have stated, that the idea of perception and the idea that well, certainly biases exist and they probably always will because we each have our own minds and our own ways of thinking and our own ways of doing life, right? Our own ways of getting on and things that make us happy and things that inspire us, things that make us sad. We're all each individuals. And so it just comes down to, I believe, just really having an awareness and not going through life ignorant and thinking that your way is the only way. And I was going to add to that.
So the vast majority of bias-related issues are perception, but there are some that are structural. Structural biases, I think, are things that you do have to address as an organization. So if in recruiting you target, you know, seven core schools, and those seven core schools are schools that have historically didn't provide equal access to different races, and therefore their student body is disproportionate to society.
That's interesting.
The outcome from those schools will be disproportionate to society, and your inbound applicant flow will be disproportionate to society. That's a structural bias. You're making a choice to focus on those seven schools which do not represent greater society. So you either have to augment your strategy in a way to make up for that, or you have to accept the fact that your systems have structural bias.
There may be people listening who don't believe that there are laws regarding protecting certain classes, but there are. And
there are.
How do we make sure that these laws are understood on top of just being known? I mean, it's one thing to have a law and not have them. I mean, laws are broken every day, right? And within an organization, if the structure of a recruiting process or retention process is already leaning toward a certain bias or away from a certain bias, how do we make sure that these laws actually do what they're intended to do?
So there are federal laws, there are state laws, there are county laws, and there are city laws. And in certain professions, there are professional association regulations.
That's true.
That by being a member of that professional association, you ascribe to a code of conduct or a code of behavior. While not a law, it is a regulatory issue that could result in removal of your public affiliation with that body. So, yes, there's a complicated situation. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. In San Francisco, it is against the law to discriminate on the basis of someone's physical appearance. So if you have plugs in your ears and 25 piercings in your nostrils and beads implanted underneath your forehead and a full-body tattoo, while that may not be the view that you personally want to put in front of your customers, it is against the law to discriminate on that individual on the basis of their appearance. You must consider them just as you would any other applicant or employee.
Sure.
If they're capable of doing that job. And San Francisco is notorious for having two different lizard men who have altered their appearance to physically look like a lizard. Through numerous surgical procedures. And there was a great news story just, I think, 4 years ago about how one of them could not gain employment because of his appearance. And people argue, you chose to do that. You live with the consequences. This comes back to that identity. That is his identity.
Right.
So the laws are there, and helping people be aware of what is and is not acceptable, I think, is an awareness situation. That's one you can do internally through advertising and messaging and communications. Where it gets a little iffy is I think there are 17 states which have hate speech laws. So you can speak your piece. It's one of the freedoms of speech. But to specifically speak hate is against the law in 17 states. Understanding what hate speech is one of those gray issues. And I think it's one where really should drive conversation. Conversation drives a lot of clarity.
It does. It does. And it's important if you are working in an HR department that you understand the laws that apply to your state, well, first of all, federally, but apply to your state and then your county and your city, just so that you are working and living within the true bounds of law are in protecting your organization. I mean, that it's important to know these things. And a lot of people go through life and work in ignorance. And I don't think we can move forward that way anymore. I don't think anybody can afford to. Also for their own self, their own soul, right? When you become aware, then all of a sudden there's a great responsibility to actually follow through on that awareness and make sure that you live it. It's an interesting time that we live in and place. And I often wonder when we look back in the history of life, the history of the world, when there have been openly gay societies or, really great discrimination against a certain race. When you think, I mean, if you do read the Bible or understand anything about it, what the Israelites went through, you know, the discrimination goes on, has been in existence throughout the history of the world. And it's interesting to see how those changes, you know, as we move from the dark ages. I feel like we're coming out of a dark age now because we're talking about it, because we're having conversations like this. So the time always goes fast on this show, Master. I would love if you have a story or a personal story that you could share of success in this area. I would love for you to share that now and then. We'll talk about any last words of wisdom you might have.
So I think a great story about success, and I won't mention the name of the company, but there was a company here in the Bay Area who had a well-known executive and well-loved executive who was really struggling with a gender identity issue, very privately. No one in the public ever really suspected that this was the case, and finally decided during a leave of absence from this particular organization that was going to begin the transformation from being a man to becoming a woman. And when the individual returned to work, there was obviously significant political discussion and debate and bias presented against this individual. And among his peers, among the executive team. And it wasn't until the employee population stood up and defended this particular individual that bias was quelled. So we often look at the top to quell issues. When it comes to issues of fairness and bias and discrimination, the solution can equally come from the bottom of an organization. I think looking at an organization's top and bottom is political in its own right, but the mass population of an organization can equally quell a discrimination issue, just as leadership from the top can. So that's my success story.
That's great. And it speaks to society too, right? When we talk about what you see on Facebook or what you see on social, where people are speaking out and saying, we're not going to tolerate this type of, and it is abuse. It's a type of intolerance and abuse, and the society is starting to say, we're not going to tolerate it anymore.
There is a well-publicized graph, and I wish I could point you to it very easily, but it points between the time at which a discriminatory issue became a public issue, a societal issue, and the point at which discrimination against that population was made illegal through changes in federal law. It covers women's suffrage, it covers the right to vote, it covers slavery, it covers all of those issues. And what it's shown is, just like everything else in life, the pace at which we move through it being a societal issue to being a resolved issue from a legal perspective is accelerating. So, you know, the gay marriage debate, what is it, 7 years total? And everybody wildly expects this issue is solved. not fully yet, but that it will be in the very, very, very near future. So that is, I think we have to keep in mind that these issues are moving very quickly, and they're moving very quickly because society is moving faster, and society in general does not accept discrimination.
Such a beautiful conversation today, Master. I cannot thank you enough for joining me today on HR Latte and sharing your thoughts, your ideas, what you have faced yourself. It's not easy to talk about what we go through personally, but you never know who it will touch and who it will benefit. Before we leave, this is what I call my selfish part of the show. I always ask my guests to tell me some of their favorite things. So if you could just rattle off some favorite things, like what's your favorite food?
Highly influenced by season. So at the moment, it's white peaches.
Ooh. Do you grow them?
I do not. My parents do.
Oh, okay. Yes, you are a farm boy. I remember you saying that.
I did.
I love white peaches. Best thing ever is fresh homemade peach ice cream. It is. So delicious. So delicious. Your favorite book. Now, this could be something that's influenced your life, maybe something you're reading now that you'd like to share.
I mentioned before, I am not a reader. It is not my favorite pastime. It does not mean that I do not do a tremendous amount of reading.
Right,
But books are not something you will see me engaging with often.
Huh. So do you have perhaps a TED Talk or a movie that has been influential?
You will find me, when I do read, and I can get deeply enthralled in reading research, specifically psychological research about engagement and learning behavior, and general communications behavior, and then also consumer behavior. So
that's
reading about behavior in general.
Okay, great. What about your favorite place? This could be maybe just your favorite room in your home. It could be a park close by that you like to take your kids to.
Does not fluctuate. My favorite place in the whole world would be the south of France during harvest.
Oh. See, no one's ever answered that way. Now I have to go.
I'm a foodie, so.
Oh, yeah. For sure. For sure. I visited Paris, and while the history was beautiful, I was not that impressed with the food. So everybody has told me you need to go to the south of France. So that'll be the next quest, I believe. And last but not least, what is your favorite thing to do?
Sit and watch children play.
Somehow I knew it was going to have to do with children. Thank you again, Master, for joining me today and talking about this just such a vitally important topic. And hopefully our words will help in some way benefit and influence the bias that continues and help it change and shift. I do truly believe that we are coming out of a time and moving to a better place. And I think it's important for all of us to remember and to think with sensitivity before we act, before we speak. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week as we continue this conversation. I'm going to be speaking with China Gorman. We'll be talking about what leadership's responsibility is in diversity in the workplace. And I believe I have one more guest that escapes me right now, but please join us weekly on HR Latte. We will be continuing this conversation throughout the month of May.